This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. Don't adjust that dial. Depending on when you were born and what station you listened to, this may be the typical sound you'd hear when you listen to music on the radio. But if you're listening to a station geared toward a younger audience, you may hear something different. That's BMO by Ari Lennox. Rhythm and blues, better known as R&B, has changed a lot over the years. The registers are higher, the production elements are more prominent, and other genres are starting to have a lot more influence, from hip-hop to alternative to electronic. What's the current sound of R&B? What do we gain when the genre changes? And what do we lose? Joining us from NPR in New York to discuss this is Naima Cochran. She's a former music executive and currently is a music and culture writer. Naima, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also at NPR New York is Tom Leo, the co-founder and CEO of You Know I Got Soul, a website covering R&B. Tom, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
And in Boston, Gabrielle Goodman is a professor of music in the voice department at the Berklee College of Music. Professor Goodman, glad to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
This may be a hard question to start with because for those who love this genre, it's almost kind of vestigial. It's as close to you as your fingerprints. But I would love to know from each of you how you got into this genre. If there was one particular artist or group who hooked you and made you know that R&B was something that was meaningful to you. Naima Cochran, what about you? Let me start with you.
I grew up in it. My uncle was a session player for the Commodores. My father was a tenor saxophone player, and my mother and stepfather were both audiophiles. So we just had the music in the house all the time. I can't remember an entree point; it just was always there.
Tom, what about you?
For me, R&B was the genre I gravitated to just because it made me feel something. I remember growing up listening to Hot 97 and BLS here in New York, and the music, the lyrics, it spoke for me. It said what I wanted to say in each song. Whenever I heard songs in the 90s, it really made me feel a certain way, and that's what I like to get out of music. So for me, that's why I gravitated to R&B the most.
Professor Goodman?
Well, I have two vested interests in it. One is that I grew up listening to it, certainly listening to Aretha Franklin and James Brown and later Chaka Khan, and then I wound up working with Chaka Khan, writing a hit for her entitled You Can Make the Story Right. Also, I grew up listening to Roberta Flack, sang background for her for 10 years. Because I listened to their music, Chaka and Roberta and so many of the other people I've worked with before I was a professor, I knew their music backwards and forwards because I had listened to it and was so in love with it when I was growing up. So therefore, when I got to the Chaka Khan rehearsal, there was a song that was to be the next single on her CD, which I had co-written, called You Can Make the Story Right. And I started singing along, and I knew every this was just a rehearsal. I wasn't contracted to sing or anything, and I knew every lyric to every song, and Chaka says, well, what are you doing tomorrow? You know, can you be on a gig tomorrow? And I said, absolutely. You know, I have to be with Roberta Flack the day after, but yes, I can do your gig. And then, so we went back and forth, but what I'm trying to get to is that I was such a fan of their music, and it had been played around our household for so long, and I sang along for so long that was an education for
right.
me. Yeah.
Naima, what does the R&B landscape look like these days? How would you describe it?
We're about to, I think we're at the top of a renaissance era for R&B. For about the past decade, R&B has almost been a bad word in urban music, and black music has been a bad word, has been a forbidden phrase for as long as there's been black music. But in quote-unquote urban music, people have wanted to brand themselves as alternative soul or emo soul or basically anything except R&B. it's just been a discarded genre. But now with artists like her and Daniel Caesar and Ari Lennox, who you just played, and with Summer Walker just marking the highest 1 week debut for a brand new R&B artist, female artist, I think that we're seeing a turn to come back to a place of appreciation and respect for the genre.
What was it, Naima, that made it such a bad word? What was the problem?
Honestly, I blame radio. It's always been a problem. Like, radio is actually who dictates, in my opinion, how we box these formats up. And ever since the conglomeration of urban radio between separating urban adult and urban main being like the Hot 97s, like the Tempo, a younger listening audience, urban adult being the place where Luther Vandross and Anita Baker and, you know, now, you know, Brian McKnight, Mary J. Blige go, being the place for like bigger voices and ballads and slower tempo. There's been like a kind of, if you're too mainstream R&B, you're old folks music, or what they might now call auntie and uncle music. And that's a slower moving chart. It's a slower selling chart. And so labels want music that's going to go to the format that's going to sell records. So people have hesitated to call themselves R&B. Labels have hesitated to want to embrace R&B because R&B, in their mind, doesn't sell records.
And Tom, could you help draw some of those lines in terms of, as you see it, what distinguishes R&B from hip hop or pop or other genres? Like, how do you know which one you're listening to?
Really, the lines are blurred, and they have been for some time, because you had hip-hop artists singing, and they would call that R&B. You had, any black artist who would choose to sing, they would call that R&B, even if it wasn't. You know, mm-hmm. An artist like Khalid, I don't necessarily call an R&B artist. He goes in many different genres, but they just box him into R&B. So I think we're finally starting to see some of the lines get less blurred. Some of the artists are claiming that R&B crown, you know, her and LMA and even an artist like a Gallant. They're sticking more to that more soulful sound that was prominent in years past, and we're starting to see it separate a bit. So it's good to see right now.
Yeah, LMA came up with several of you in terms of the artists that you like. Ronaldo tweeted, "My current R&B playlist includes Anderson .Paak, Eric Robertson, LMA, and a constant flow of 80s and 90s hits. Gotta have some Guy and Keith Sweat in the mix." For those of you who are not familiar with her, let's play a piece of one of her tracks. This is Boot Up by LMA. Hey, can you focus on me? Baby, can you focus on me? Hands in the soap, how the faucet's running, and I keep looking at you. Stuck on your phone, or you're stuck in your zone. You don't ever cook, but I don't wanna give up. Baby, I just want you to get up. My error, cued the wrong song. There's so much great R&B. There's so much good music. It just washes over you, and sometimes you... No, it's my fault. I cued the wrong one. That was actually Focus by her. We will play LMA in just a minute when we continue our conversation with music and culture writer Naima Cochran, Tom Leo, the founder and CEO of You Know I Got Soul, and Professor Gabrielle Goodman of the Berklee College of Music. Glad to hear from some of you about the other artists that you enjoy. Derek tweeted, "My go-tos for current R&B are Brittany Howard, Jill Scott, and D'Angelo. Other than that, I tend to live mostly in the glory days of the 70s soul, or the earlier classics like Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin." I'm Joshua Johnson, and you are listening to the soulful sounds of 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
Here's some of what's at stake at the next Democratic presidential debate. Elizabeth Warren is on the rise, but is she the new frontrunner? Bernie Sanders makes his first major appearance since his recent heart attack. And Joe Biden is now at the center of the impeachment story. The NPR Politics podcast will be there after the debate to break down all the moments that matter.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the state of R&B music with Naima Cochran, Tom Leo of the music site You Know I Got Soul, and Professor Gabrielle Goodman from the Berklee College of Music. We just heard Focus by Her. Glad to hear some of you are fans of her, including Cynthia, who emailed, having grown up in a household where sounds of Motown filled the air, I have a great appreciation for the classics. Being a Gen Xer, I loved the classics as well as artists from the 90s like Jodeci, SWV, and New Edition. I must say that artists such as her and Ari Lennox are keeping R&B alive and relevant. As promised, let's get back to that track that I mentioned earlier. Here is Boot Up by Ella May.
I'm touching the ceiling. When I'm with you, I can't breathe. Boy, you do something to me. Ooh, no, I'll never get over you until I find something new that gave me high like you do. Yeah. Ooh, no, I'll never get over you until I find something new that gave me high.
That's Boot Up by Ella May. Thanks to those of you who called out that particular track. Andrew emailed, I am a lifelong fan of the genre with a collection of almost 3,000 albums, classic and contemporary. From a fan's perspective, the past decade has been a golden age for this music. Contrast that with Charles, who likes his music a little more virtual. Charles emailed, Spotify has a great current acoustic R&B playlist. Professor, I'd love to get your sense of how the genre has changed in terms of production. We had a listener who called in to talk about the instrumentation of R&B these days. Here's what Marvin from Michigan left in our inbox.
I'm 52 years old, and I'm also a musician. And one of the things that drew me to be a musician was the romanticism that existed between musicians when they're playing on stage. If you look back at the Commodores, Ohio Players, Earth, Wind, and Fire, there was a chemistry between the musicians that one listening could pick up on. And that's what drew you into the music.
Naima, with regards to this production aspect of it, how do you see it? I mean, does it make a difference if the technical way in which the music is made is not the way it was made when Marvin Gaye was in the studio? I mean, don't genres have to adapt with their fan bases?
Genres do have to adapt with their fan bases, but what you've lost is what the caller said was like the chemistry between musicians and the artist that used to take place in the studio when you would have session players and they're together kind of playing off of each other, or you would have the producer in the studio with the artist working right. on the music together. Now the producer can email a track, the artist can lay their vocals, right. you know, they program the music, it all comes together in pieces, mm-hmm. and there's a lack, like the song may still sound good, but there's a kind of heart missing from it that you used to get from music back in the day. The other thing is that advances in production have led to a decrease in instrumentation, because if you can program all of those sounds, why am I paying day rates for all of these session players to come into the studio for however many days, right? So, and labels don't necessarily want to lay out that budget with the decline in physical sales, want to lay out that budget to pay that kind of money to have an artist on the road with the full band, or to put session players in the studio for live music, et cetera. So yeah, even though you have to adapt, the same as with, you know, adaptation in industry leads to loss of jobs for actual physical people, there is something human that's lost.
You know, we've heard from a number of musicians on this score and also on just the changing nature of the genre. Jim tweeted, "In the 60s and 70s, I played bass, backing up great R&B acts in my hometown of Philly. I feel like the more they produce auto-tuned, beatboxed, over-compressed tracks, the more they lose the individuality of the human beings behind the song. True. I'm sticking with my old oldies." Tom Leo, I'd love you to respond to that, because there was a time in which all the technology that went into R&B music was novel, it was cool, it was part of the sound. You could have artists that use kind of auto-tuned or vocoded music where you hear someone kind of speak singing in a high-pitched electronic sound, where that was considered new. It was the cutting edge. It was part and parcel of R&B. And now it's kind of a reason for some people to say, oh, I'm going to stick with the oldies. What's that about? Did the technology kind of jump the shark at some point? Or is this just the generational way that parents always dislike their kids' music?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the way the genre has changed and attention spans have shortened. I call it the iTunes effect, where you could listen to a 30-second snippet of a song and then make a decision if you like that song or not. And R&B historically as a genre is not meant to be consumed that way. So in effect, the genre suffered, and now we're getting songs that are very much shorter in length. They no longer have bridges. It doesn't make sense to bring in live instrumentation. It's just too costly. And, you know, you could stream a song twice as many times if it's 2.5 minutes compared to 5 minutes. Right. So it just makes more sense financially if you're looking to get those streams, just to make it, you know, the easiest way and the cheapest way possible. So unfortunately, I think that's part of what we're seeing the fallout from, the way that attention spans have shortened. And that's just where we're at now in R&B from the way I see it.
One listener tweeted, "Don't forget about blue-eyed soul like Alan Stone and Sam Smith. Okay. Love, love, love those falsettos." Okay. Naima, there's a tendency in some cases for black pop artists to be characterized as R&B singers like Beyonce, like Rihanna. How do you see that link between R&B, black culture, particularly when non-black people make R&B music or music that's labeled as R&B?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to say is that white people making soul music is not new. Blue-eyed Soul was coined in the 60s, right? And it's always been, and it's also always been something that we contended with since the days of, you know, Chuck Berry saying Elvis stole his style. There are some artists who respect the roots of the soul music in the genre, like a Daryl Hall, or like a Tina Marie, who never was a pop artist ever. She was always on the black music charts. And then there are some artists like a Justin, who people feel like, you know, they took all the elements of black music, but they don't actually like give appropriate, you know, honor and credit to the artist that they're emulating. I do think that I think Tom said this earlier, if you're a black artist and you sing, they just want to call you R&B. And so what has happened is, starting in the 80s, black artists started working even harder to appeal to a pop audience. Motown was pop music. I mean, it was soul music, but Berry made it a pop label on purpose. He wanted the music to cross over. And in doing so, there's been some kind of removal of, like, the kind of grit and the underbelly of true, this undistilled soul music. Beyonce did start as an R&B artist, but now she is a pop artist. I mean, but the other thing is that in terms of just like nomenclature, pop music just means popular music. Like technically right now, rap music is pop music because it's the most popular, largest selling format. Mm-hmm. But Rihanna was never an R&B artist. She was always a pop artist, you know, or at best a dance hall artist / pop artist. I think it's on us and on the way the industry has kind of conditioned us to want to label everybody as something, right? Where do they fit on the radio? Where do I find them in the music bin? What playlist are they going to go on iTunes? And that kind of forces people to classify folks somewhere.
Several of you talked about the meaning and the content of the music in terms of what you like or don't like. Lamar tweeted, the 80s and 90s were some of the best years. They had real meanings. Today's R&B is very complicated. And Judith emailed, Focus is a beautiful song, but I understood very few of the words. This is how you lose some hip 66-year-olds. Professor Goodman, what about that? The meaning, the lyricism of R&B today versus yesterday?
Well, I think the lyrics have changed. I think part of that comes from hip-hop. We're still struggling with some of the language that is used, that has been used in hip-hop, that has filtered into sung R&B music. And hip-hop also has R&B roots, because almost all of the earlier hip-hop and rap songs that came about in the 80s were samples of James Brown. So you cannot disconnect that. There is a connection between the genres. Yes, the lyrics have been corrupted. That's the best way I can put it. But not everyone is using corrupt lyrics, as I said before. You know, Boot Up is a fun song. You know, it's a fun vibey so-called song. But then there are other lyrics there are other songs that contain lyrics such as "Let's Sex by a Trash Can," which I have a serious problem with. Why? Because you have young girls listening to that, who may think, and young boys by that matter, who think that that is okay, and that is not okay. It tends to devalue and dehumanize people. And if we have young people, and especially in the African American community, who need to be fortified and built up, they're listening to something like this, and they're in fact being torn down. So we have all kinds of lyrics out there. There are some that are okay, some that are very demeaning and demoralizing. Some of that, again, you know, goes to the taste of the listeners. Some, you know, the record companies are pushing certain things, and then, of course, they have to get it on the radio, so we're pushing what's popular, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big conundrum with all of those things at once.
And I do want to talk more about radio play in just a minute. But, Tom, I'd like to get your opinion on this as well. I mean, I understand the argument about lyricism, about meaning. On the other hand, I don't know anyone who hated the song untitled How Does It Feel by D'Angelo. Hmm. No one knows what he said.
Yeah.
No, but you couldn't recite the lyrics. If I paid you $1,000, you couldn't recite it without Googling it. I don't know one person who would say, well, that really doesn't count because of the lyrics. I think, Tom, in addition to just the complaints or the critiques about the artistry, the flexibility in terms of the definition has always evolved, has always had outliers, and now in retrospect, it's easy to create a more canonical definition when we know we wouldn't evict D'Angelo.
Right, exactly. I mean, the way I look at it, you know, the lyrics, it's like, where's the love? I mean, I grew up when R&B was love music, and now it's kind of evolved to lyrics I can't really relate to. I never wanted to be that grumpy older guy who's like, oh, my generation's music is better than this current generation. This is all trash. I don't look at it like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
but it's just evolved, and it's, you know, I almost don't want to put, you know, these current day artists in the same category as D'Angelo. It's just a different style of music. Yes, it's mostly rooted in R&B music, but it's not the same thing to me. So that's part of the challenge I'm faced with when trying to classify, you know, different artists and what's what is, you know, it's just different to me.
In terms of the love theme, Soraya wrote on our Facebook page, "The Quiet Storm was a part of my evening ritual at Temple University, also in Philadelphia. When The Secret Garden came on for your promo while I was driving home, I was taken back to when R&B was actually romance. Same themes, mind you, just a less coarse way to say what you need no imagination to say today." The Quiet Storm is one of the most successful radio formats in broadcasting history. It's one of the signposts, one of the cornerstones of R&B music. We'll talk about that when we continue with Naima Cochran, Tom Leo, and Professor Gabrielle Goodman. Stay close. I choose myself, yeah, I'm first.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
What are the things that make us human? Why are we the way we are? I'm Guy Raz. Each week on NPR's TED Radio Hour, we dive into the incredible forces that shape our very existence. Listen now.
Back now to our conversation with Naima Cochran, Tom Leo, and Professor Gabrielle Goodman. We heard from a listener named Kyle in St. Louis who told us about his favorite genre-bending artist. Here's what Kyle had to say.
I think one of the most important R&B artists, and it's tough to say if he's truly R&B over the past few years, has been Frank Ocean. From his first album, Channel Orange, to his most latest release, Blonde, it's an incredible body of work. It's aggressively personal. It's willing to experiment with sound and texture and quality. And I think it's the kind of direction that R&B and kind of music at large will be moving to in the future.
Yeah, Kyle, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Professor, what do you make of the Frank Oceans with more and more rappers kind of crossing over into more traditionally R&B territory?
I absolutely love Frank Ocean. I absolutely love Daniel Caesar. I think that they are keeping real R&B music alive. I'd like to say that historically there have always been genres and subgenres of R&B music. In teaching the R&B classes here at Berkeley, you know, we look at classic soul, which is Aretha Franklin. We look at Chaka Khan and Parliament Funkadelic, which is funk. We look at Jill Scott, which is neo-soul. It's all R&B music. So this is how all of these things coexist.
Several of you have sent comments in about radio play. And Tom, we've mentioned this format, the Quiet Storm, this kind of a late night, romantic, slow tempo, highly passionate love song format. That format is still around, but it's evolved a lot. It was highly successful when it dropped. WHUR here in Washington, D.C., the radio station that's owned by Howard University, which is a historically black university, became very prominent for the Quiet Storm. But that genre has kind of evolved as R&B has evolved and as radio, terrestrial AM, FM radio has evolved. How do you see that evolution affecting the genre overall?
The way I look at it, I always think about urban AC radio, urban adult contemporary, with that primarily used to be the Quiet Storm, adult R&B, where those artists would get played. And now we're starting to see a lot of the labels just going there. It gets a lot less reach than hip-hop radio, but you know, labels are just sending artists there, even though it might not fit that format, just because it's a cheaper way to get their music heard by the masses. So we're seeing kind of a muddling of what that genre constitutes. But for me, the biggest point I'd like to make about radio is that if someone's listening to the radio and they don't hear the music they want to hear, the music you want to hear is still out there. If you grew up on the 90s, the artists who made music in the 90s are still making music. It's just not getting the reach it used to. You've just got to, you know, try to find it on your own. You know, artists like a Music Soul Child, who I'm a big fan of, just put out a double album a few years ago, and it didn't really get a lot of airplay, you know, in comparison to artists like a Tank, who went more with the trendier sounds and is getting a lot of play. So just because you're hearing what you're hearing on radio might not be for you, what you like is probably still out there. You just got to go and find it yourself.
I should note, we do have a playlist of current R&B picked by our producers. You can find that on our website, the1a.org. And since Tom mentioned Tank, we should play one quick track by Tank. This is called When We.
I like it when you lose. I like it when you go there. I like the way you use it. I like that you don't play fair. Yeah. Recipe for disaster. When I'm just trying to take my time. Yeah. Stroke is getting deep and faster. Dreaming like I'm out of line. Who came to make sweet love? Not me. Who came to kiss and love? Not me. Who came to beat it up? Rock
gate. And don't use those hands to put up that gate and stop me. When we
touch. That's Tank with When We. We also heard from some of you about the subject matter of modern songs compared to some older songs. Here's what Charles from Nashville left us using our app 1A Vox Pop.
How has the sound changed? I believe that the songwriting has changed tremendously. There's not as many ballads. The content of the songs are just not what they once were. And also the tempo is much lower in general. In R&B, a lot slower. And so there's not a lot of mid to up-tempo music in R&B anymore.
Hey Charles, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Also, David, regarding radio, David emailed, "I long for the days of a more creative R&B format. Here in Cleveland in the early 80s, we had an R&B FM station that would play all the R&B artists of the day and throw in some Steely Dan, as well as other select rock artists. It was so refreshing to hear that most unusual blend. Great show." With regards to that blend, Professor Goodman, it's interesting because, you know, nowadays, if you want to start blending artists that you've never heard before, you've got all kinds of tools at your disposal. Pandora has new options now for music discovery or deep cuts, you know, which has now been acquired by SiriusXM Satellite Radio. Spotify has some of that functionality. What's your sense of the future of R&B, particularly R&B music discovery? And I say discovery in both ways, both finding new artists and for new audiences to understand the forebears of what came before.
Well, I think that people can create their own playlists now. So I know I speak to my students about this a lot, and their playlists are varied. You know, they may have some jazz, some hip hop, some neo soul, some Aretha, some classic soul, Aretha Franklin, all on the same playlist. So I think we're moving towards a place where the lines are going to be even more blurred because of that. And that's fine as long as you respect the history of the music. I think we will always have genres and subgenres as we do now. We'll have hip-hop and then a subgenre of that, and then soul and then another subgenre of that. Who knows what someone may be creating as we speak, you know, a completely new sound or a morphing of several different sounds. So who knows, but I think it's great that there is a resurgence of R&B music, and I have to say, and R&B of the 90s and 80s, and some tip of the nod of the head to New Jack Swing, as Bruno Mars has tapped into that. He's also tapped into the music of the 80s. He's tapped into the music of the 90s and also the 70s. So, but then he still continues to move forward. So you have all of those things happening at the same time. I know that I keep saying that, but it's true. And we neglected to say that I worked with Norman Conners for a very long time and had an opportunity to record with him. He's one of the kings of Quiet Storm. They played his music. I grew up listening to his music with Phyllis Hyman singing, Gene Karn, and they had elements of soul. Norman's early recordings with Phyllis Hyman and Gene Karn had not only elements of soul, but also elements of jazz. So you also have the meshing of jazz and R&B as well, and that's going to be moving forward. You see that with Incognito and some of the groups in Europe coming over to the United States, and also artists here. Jill Scott does that as well.
Glad you mentioned artists in Europe. One last comment from Durham, who tweeted, "I'm surprised the conversation about R&B has been pretty much limited to the USA. As a black DJ, I regularly play soul music from Kenya, Brazil, South Korea, Indonesia, and more." Plenty in the landscape of R&B, and we appreciate y'all helping us just scratch the surface of it for a little while. Naima Cochran, a music and culture writer. Naima, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Tom Leo, the co-founder and CEO of You Know I Got Soul. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Professor Gabrielle Goodman in the voice department at the Berklee College of Music. Professor, thanks very much.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Jonquilin Hill with help from Arfi Getty. It was edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.